Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Well, the NBA's exclusive negotiating window with ESPN and Turner has expired, meaning the league's media rights have hit the open market. We'll talk about that and much more on the new Sports Media Watch podcast. This is John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. If you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's start with that. As I said, the NBA's media rights have officially hit the open market, but all indications are that ESPN and Warner Brothers Discovery will be renewing. In fact, John Aran reported late Monday night that the sides were much closer to an extension than had been previously thought, and that they were close to even a handshake deal by the time of the exclusive negotiating window expiring on Monday. Now, you know, a handshake deal is not a deal, but obviously, given some of the rumblings, including from Aran's newsletter, where, you know, it's like, well, maybe it could go all the way into the fall. Certainly, ESPN and WBD being close to a handshake deal already does not point to this going all the way into the fall. There's interest, obviously, from Comcast, from Amazon. There's no question that there are very interested suitors. The only question, in my view, is what kind of money is the NBA going to get? We'll see. You know, they set the bar pretty high with that $75 billion. I don't know who floated that, but that was a mistake to float that to CNBC. Or maybe not. Maybe it wasn't a mistake, but certainly perception-wise, it seems like it will be. You know, with three or four partners, you would imagine certainly the NBA will get an increase. There was never any question about that. But if they want to get that double, triple, right now, they're making $24 billion over the course of this nine-year deal that expires after next season. So to get to $48 billion, you're obviously, ESPN and WBD will have to pay more for the rights. Right now, they're only paying $1.4 and $1.2 billion, respectively. So you could get close to $2 billion there just from those two, and it would be a reasonable increase. Maybe $1.75 billion per, right? So that gets you to, what's 1.75?
That's 3.5.
No, there you go. Good. That's good math. So that gets you to $3.5 billion a year. And say you get $1 billion for Amazon, $1 billion for Comcast. Let's say $750 million for those two per year. How much would that be?
It'd be $5 billion total between the four.
$5 billion a year. So if you get to $5 billion a year, right? And let me try to figure out how long a deal would have to be to get you to Well, at $5 billion a year, you get to $50 billion in 10 years, right? And that's reasonable. A 10-year deal makes sense. So if you can get to $5 billion a year across all your partners, then you get to $50 billion. And I think that number is, you know, reachable. To get to that $75 billion now, you'd have to go, 15 years? 10 years makes sense. The NFL's doing 11. Drew, I'll bring you in on that note.
Yeah. I think right now the biggest question is what the packages are going to look like, right? There's no question that ESPN and Turner are both likely to renew, but it's what is the inventory going to look like, right? There will be some level of increase in the rights fee, but presumably there's also going to be a slimming down for each company of what inventory they're carrying. So I know in your article that came out over the weekend, you suggested that maybe ESPN/Disney is going to slim down on the amount of ABC games that they have. That obviously would leave a lane for Comcast or NBC Universal to come in and maybe pick up some of that broadcast inventory. For Turner, their Tuesday night package, that seems like something that could be a casualty for them. So it's kind of, where is the NBA going to fill in these gaps, and how much will Amazon, Comcast, etc. pay for what is essentially the scraps of ESPN and Turner's current deals?
Well, one interesting aspect is that Andrew Marchand of The Athletic reported Monday that Amazon could be in the market for a conference finals or NBA finals. If Amazon's deal is like that, then Turner is in trouble, because obviously there's only two conference finals in the NBA. They're not going to create three or four, right? So to me, I've always thought that this would work out where ESPN gets a conference final and the finals every other year. So a conference final one year, the finals the next year. NBC, same deal. So let's say it's 2026, first year of the deal. ESPN has the conference finals, NBC has the finals, and TNT has the other conference final. And then you just flip ESPN and NBC throughout the deal. So the thought is, on my end, has always been that Turner keeps its conference final, because what else do they have? If Amazon gets in, I don't see why, where Turner has a place if Amazon's getting that kind of deal. But I don't see why Amazon would get in for scraps either.
Yeah. Here's my thinking around this, especially because yesterday we had some reporting that TNT and ESPN, both the incumbents, have the right to essentially match any deal from a third party. So that would be NBC or Amazon in this case. I'm wondering if it is in the NBA's best interest to offer Amazon a deal like that in hopes that they could get TNT to match an offer that is, potentially above what they're negotiating at the current moment.
Well, I mean, that might end up being what happens, right? The best part about that kind of provision in a contract is that it does create a circumstance where, you can keep your existing partners but get them to, pay up. So to me, I think it'll ultimately come down to how Amazon values that kind of a package, right? Obviously, a conference final on Amazon Prime would be probably fine, because they're airing NFL games. Those games are rated and they do well. So that's not a crazy thing for the NBA. For Amazon, I said this in my article the other day, but Amazon has yet to get a package of games that would be really coveted by the networks. The networks didn't want Thursday Night Football. It's kind of funny how that played out. No one ever talks about the fact that none of the networks wanted Thursday Night Football. They all had it, and they all said, yeah, the ratings are nice, but we aren't interested. And that feels like it should have been maybe a bigger deal. But, Amazon paid $1 billion for something that nobody was going to, compete with them for. Fox got out of Thursday Night Football a year early. Do people realize that? People forget. Fox got out of Thursday Night Football a year early. It was not valuable to people. So between that, the playoff game obviously is valuable. Everyone wants an extra NFL playoff game, but it's extraneous. It's new. You know, it's this extra game that just happened since COVID. And then for baseball, as I mentioned before, the games on Peacock and Apple TV are, or well, not Peacock anymore, but certainly that have aired on Peacock and Apple TV are all the games that ESPN gave up. It's weekday games. So this would be a significant escalation if all of a sudden now Amazon is carrying an NBA conference final. And to me, that would be the only way that it would be worth it for Amazon to really get in. Because if you're just getting in and you're getting NBA TV's games, you know that those TNT games, I think if you're Amazon, that's worth maybe a couple billion. And the other thing too is Amazon will pay more for that than TNT would, because it is a streamer and it would be a milestone for them. They're paying more than anyone would have paid for TNF as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's why Amazon's such an interesting player here. It's because, you know, for them, establishing the relationship with the NFL is worth more than the package itself, right, to any other traditional broadcaster. Same probably goes with the NBA. Getting their foot in the door is worth something to them. That being said, I'm kind of with you in the sense that when we're thinking about the regular season packages here, you know, look at what happened with MLB's packages on Peacock and their package on Apple TV. Like, who's watching that? I don't think NBA regular season is a destination property like Thursday Night Football is during the football season. So I'm not sure how many eyeballs you'd be able to get over on Amazon Prime on a random Tuesday night. Or, you know, Clippers Suns, right? I mean, even though that'd be a great matchup for any broadcaster to show in the regular season, I can't see Amazon getting nearly the viewership they would on, you know, an ESPN or a TNT for that game.
Well, this is where, you know, folks like Tony Kornheiser kind of get things wrong. You know, Tony was musing the other day, well, why are people paying all this money for the NBA? The NBA regular season is not a highly rated property, but it gets you seven figures pretty much every single game for 7 months, twice a week. Each individual network is guaranteed a seven-figure audience in the weeknight. And that's for games that I want to keep in mind here with ESPN and Turner that are almost all coexists. Turner has a few exclusives that are, yeah, most of them are exclusive in one market. Sometimes they get a full exclusive. ESPN almost never gets an exclusive. Some of these games are blacked out locally, and they're still getting you seven figures. There's value in that for cable. I don't know if there's value for that for Amazon, but for ESPN and Turner, yeah, it makes a heck of a lot of sense. It makes a ton of sense that ESPN is paying $1 billion to know that there are two nights of the week, every single week from October to April, where they're guaranteed a seven-figure audience. And then after that, they have April, May, and, well, you know, obviously June is the finals. So at April and May for even bigger audiences than that, I mean, obviously it's worth the money. I mean, this, you know, everyone has this bug about the NBA. This whole idea, oh, the NBA is not popular. No one I know watches the NBA. Well, yeah, I know no one you know watches the NBA. Okay. But plenty of people do. And not just the NBA. I mean, obviously, baseball is getting $1.5 billion a year, and baseball's national numbers are terrible by design. I want to be clear. That's baseball's decision to prioritize its RSNs over its national TV contracts. But if baseball's making $500 million for national TV games that outside of the Fox game of the week, and I mean, obviously, Sunday Night Baseball, it's tumbleweeds. It's six figures. You know, so obviously the NBA is worth that money.
Yeah, you're talking about games that are airing on, you know, FS1.
Yeah.
You know, it's
TBS.
Like, and TBS, exactly. So I'm not sure that is equivalent to what we're talking about with the NBA. But I also think there's a danger in suggesting that that type of audience would translate over to a streaming service, right? Because right now there's still friction when it comes to getting people to view live sport events on streaming. I think there's an exception to the rule when you're talking about a property like the NFL, when the Thursday night is a destination property, even if it's only, and I'm saying only in you know, scare quotes here, but if it's only getting 12 million, you know, that's still orders of magnitude higher than, you know, an NBA regular season game, right? Also, here's the other thing. When we're talking about, you know, MLB's packages with, you know, well, now Apple TV, because their Peacock package is no longer. I believe Apple TV paid, what, like $100 million a season for their games?
I'm shocked to hear that, because I know Peacock apparently was paying 30. Now, Apple's deal doubleheaders every week, but I'm surprised.
What's really surprising, let me make sure I got that right.
What's really surprising is that baseball gave up a weekly exclusive for $30 million a year, and then two weekly exclusives for whatever Apple is paying, but they wouldn't allow ESPN to air exclusives on Mondays and Wednesday nights, which is what ESPN would have wanted.
Gotcha. So it is a $55 million fee per year, and then $30 million goes towards advertising. So in total, 85. But I, for the rights fee specifically, is $55 million. So apologies for getting that number.
It's no big deal.
Incorrect. But in any case, like, you know, they're not paying very much at all for that regular season package. That's the point. So unless Amazon is getting some very highly valued inventory, like you said, a conference finals, you know, it can't just be the NBA TV first round games, right? It's got to be more.
Well, first of all, to go back to what I was saying, it is ridiculous that baseball is giving up a night of exclusive games for that amount of money, even at baseball's viewership. ESPN wanted exclusive games. They wanted the Monday and Wednesday night games to be exclusive. So give them the exclusivity and get, well, I guess the difference between ESPN paying for the Wednesday and Monday night games and not paying for it must have been smaller than the amount that they got from Apple and Peacock. It must have been. Otherwise, it's a crazy decision by baseball. But that's hardly anything for exclusive, you know, big four games. Now, to be clear, baseball's regular season numbers are pretty dreadful because they don't do any weeknight exclusives. The difference between a weeknight exclusive and just a coexist or certainly a blackout game, you can get seven figures for regular season baseball on a random Wednesday night in July if it's exclusive. Certainly, I would say baseball is getting drastically underpaid for those games. Of course, then again, who knows what the viewership is for them.
Let's quickly talk about the broadcast component here, John, since we've touched a lot on the streaming so far. There's obviously a few ways this can go, but I want to get your opinion. Do you think we're going to see NBC as a partner? And if so, how do you think that'll look? And if not, what gives with the NBA's relationship with their broadcast partners?
Well, everything points to NBC getting back in. The reporting that ESPN wants the finals full time, but the NBA wants to alternate. Well, who are they going to alternate with? The only option is NBC, unless they go completely crazy and give it to Turner or Amazon. Now, they said Amazon might get a finals later in the deal. Yeah, Amazon might get a Super Bowl at some point, right? You know, I mean, it's all way down the timeline. So NBC getting in makes the most sense. Fox is not going to surprise you. CBS is not going to be involved, right? But CBS is under new management too. Maybe that approach that they have toward big swings changes. I think Sean McManus was great, but they certainly don't take a lot of big swings. But if that changes, it's not going to happen immediately. It's too late to get in. So only NBC is an option here, unless you're going to put it on ION, and they're not going to do that. Right. So NBC getting in, getting the finals every other year, getting a conference final every other year, I think that makes the most sense. What will it look like? It will look like Sunday Night Football compared to the NBA and NBC. It's not going to look like those great six game weekends in 2002. You know, it's not going to be Tom Hammond and Marv Albert. It's going to be a lot of ESPN folks. Now, Tirico, who frankly, Tirico is the equal of Bob Costas. He's the equal of prime Bob Costas, right? So that is actually a perfect fit. Noah Eagle, who's going to do Olympic basketball for NBC, is going to be the lead voice. I can already tell you. I mean, I don't have sources, by the way. I'm just telling you. It just makes sense. So Noah Eagle will be your lead play-by-play. Tarika will be the costas in the studio. It'll be, you know, Sunday nights, maybe Sunday evenings. NBC does not have the weird, you know, phobia about preempting Sunday primetime that ABC does. And as far as game selection, I think if you're ESPN, you're going to do what Fox and NBC did with NASCAR. If you have to give up inventory, it's going to be on your broadcast network. I think ABC will still get the finals. So when we say every other year, NBC is the finals, ABC is the finals the other year. The NBA is not giving that to cable. Which actually begs the question, in the years when NBC doesn't get the finals, ESPN would probably still get their conference final anyway, because ESPN is going to want to have every year big NBA games, the biggest games on its cable networks. So I don't know how they would do that with the conference finals, because the finals would be on ABC. So NBC to me would replace ABC as the primary broadcast partner. ABC would probably keep Christmas, because I think ESPN and ABC value that a great deal. And you know, if the NBA was smart, I don't know if they could pull this off, but maybe for a little pay cut, you could, in these deals with NBC and ABC, say we have Christmas priority. So, you know, you have to give us the Christmas window, not the NFL. That's the only way the NBA is going to beat the NFL on Christmas, is to contractually force the other networks to carry its games. But I think for the NBA, NBC would make the most sense. I think NBC will come in. They'll be the primary over the year partner, get the finals every other year, and ABC gets Christmas and the finals every other year as well.
So by the sounds of things, John, from your perspective, at least, it's pretty safe to say that you think the NBA will end up with four media rights partners when it's all said and done.
I think it's leaning that way. Let's talk a little bit about the streaming partners. Because obviously Amazon, if it gets in, will be the NBA's primary streaming partner. But any deal with the other networks will presumably include exclusive games on ESPN Plus, Max, and Peacock. Especially Peacock. Peacock will have to be part of this deal for NBC. So now you are trying to divvy up games among seven partners. How are you going to do it? Well, for ESPN Plus, Max, and Peacock, there are 96 games that currently air on NBA TV. NBA TV will probably still have to air some games as well, but I would say you divvy up those four. Maybe NBA TV could just air crunch time every night, right? I don't know. I mean, but to me, that would be where you would go with that. Maybe each of those partners gets one exclusive playoff game a year, and that's what you do with those NBA TV games, like Orlando, Cleveland the other night. Maybe that's exclusively on ESPN Plus one night. And then game three would be on Peacock, and game four would be on Max, because no one wants to watch that series. But
yeah, it does become a lot of mouths to feed. I'll be interested to see what the playoff inventory for those smaller streamers looks like, because, man, could you imagine if you're targeting one series, kind of like you suggested, and now, you know, if you're a Magic fan, you have to go buy ESPN Plus and Peacock and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how that would work out, but you're probably right. I mean, there probably will be some sort of streaming component, even when it comes to playoff games.
Yeah, I think so. And obviously Amazon doesn't really feel like streaming, because it's Nielsen rated and everyone has it, or a lot of people do. But obviously Amazon will have some nights to itself, not overflow games, but nights to itself as well.
Yeah. All right, John, let's move on to the actual playoff games that are happening right now. We've gotten through the first weekend of the NBA playoffs, and then Monday and Tuesday as well, as we record this Wednesday morning. I would say the headline right now is LeBron and the Lakers are down 0-2, and so is Kevin Durant and the Suns. That's two of the league's marquee draws on the verge of elimination.
Right.
How are we looking for the rest of the playoffs from a viewership perspective, knowing that?
Well, that's not great. You know, even in 2021, when Steph missed the playoffs and LeBron got knocked out in the first round, Durant was there with Brooklyn into the second round all the way to a game seven. So Durant's not on the same level as LeBron and Steph. He does not draw that well. He doesn't draw poorly. People watch Kevin Durant play, but he's, you know, him losing in the first round is not the same as LeBron losing or Steph missing. The matchups do not bode well, and not just in the first round, because, you know, at least you have Sixers-Knicks. You at least have two more games of Lakers-Nuggets, and it probably will, you know, just be two more games. You know, you have Dallas Clippers, which Dallas embarrassed themselves on Sunday, but actually came out with an effort last night and won game two. So there's some competitive first round series. If you can get Dallas OKC, that's a little ring to it. You know, Denver Minnesota, though, that's going to be a test of the NBA's fan base, because it is a high quality series on paper. So and Minnesota should start to become a marquee draw. Anthony Edwards should start to become a star. And we'll see how that fares. But those are the two weak series in the second. Well, no, that's not true, because Boston, Cleveland, no one's going to tune in for that. That's going to be a sweep, presumably. I can't see Cleveland being competitive. And this version of the Cavs, you take LeBron James off the Cavs, it's not a great TV draw franchise. But you will have Milwaukee, New York, presumably, or Indiana. New York could be just fine. You just have to have New York. You have a Knicks series. You have a Celtics series. And then in the West, we'll see just how deep the NBA fan base goes as far as caring about the game and not the stars.
Yeah, I think there's some momentum for a couple of these teams, specifically the Timberwolves, I think, are picking up some national momentum. People are identifying Anthony Edwards as perhaps the next huge superstar in the league. Obviously, he's an incredible watch. I mean, what a freak athlete he is. And, you know, the Timberwolves are just a team that I think people can rally behind. They play some really good defense. They have an exciting player in Anthony Edwards. And I think a lot of NBA talking heads think they could be a surprise. So I kind of see them as this year's version of last year's Kings.
Yeah.
Where people will kind of pick up on them in the first round and follow them through the playoffs.
Well, remember, the Kings got knocked out in that first round last year, but certainly you make a good point. You know, Minnesota's been around, though. This is your third straight playoffs. But they drew pretty well against Memphis, of all teams, 2 years ago. So there is something of a fan base there, and it's a novelty. You know, when I was a kid, it was exotic to see the Boston Celtics on TV, because the Celtics were bad throughout my youth. So I was like, well, the Celtics are on? That's rare. I mean, there was a period of time, you know, I had never seen the Celtics on TV before. So, you know, it's like, I can't wait to see this. Let me see what the Celtics is all about, you know? Same thing with the 76ers. Same thing with the Mavericks. There is a certain element of when teams are bad for a long time, they're not on TV. You don't see them. And even today, with all the games on TV, you don't really see Minnesota very often. So to me, you know, there might be an element of that, even though the Timberwolves have been in the playoffs a couple of years in a row now. And Edwards is an exhilarating player. You know, Minnesota has players that people do not like. People do not like Rudy Gobert, and they do not like Karl Anthony Towns. They view them both, I guess, as not sufficiently masculine, which is hilarious. Go out and pick a fight with Rudy Gobert. See how that works out for you. But they have a low opinion of them. They view them as soft. And Edwards makes up for a lot of that. Edwards is an exhilarating, exciting player that has a lot of people's respect. And he's young. He's, you know, obviously incredibly athletic. And so if, you know, no one is a star until they're a star. No one moves the needle until they move the needle. And there's some potential there if Minnesota can give Denver a good fight. I don't really think Denver is unbeatable. This is not the Golden State Warriors we're talking about, all right? It says they have the Lakers number. That's pretty much it. I think Minnesota could be, you know, I don't think they'll beat Denver, but I think that could be a competitive 6 or 7 game series, maybe. That would be certainly, look, when you don't have the teams, you just got to get to 7. That's really it. When you don't have the teams, get to 7. If you can get 4 7 game series in the second round, there's not going to be a problem. They're not going to, obviously, because Boston's not going to need 7 against Cleveland. But the other 3 series could be very competitive. So if you can just get as many 7th games as you can, make sure to shuttle Scott Foster around to a bunch of series, right? you got to get to that 7th game, okay? That's the most important thing when you don't have the teams.
Yeah, and that's the lesson we learn every time playoffs for the NBA, MLB, or the NHL come around. It's all about getting to 7 games. But obviously a tough break for the league when LeBron James and the Lakers blow a 20-point lead,
yeah.
Because you're not extending that series past probably 4 or 5 games max now. But yeah, this year will be truly a test to see if they can, you know, market some of their young rising stars, market some of these up-and-coming teams like the Oklahoma City Thunder, like the Timberwolves, and turn them into teams that people care about and will tune in to watch.
Yeah, and I'm still reasonably high on the finals. I think it's not going to take much for the finals to be the most watched in 5 years. And I think as long as you have a competitive finals, given where the ratings are generally right now compared to even 2022, you know, it took a long time to rebuild sports viewership after COVID. And I think you look back at that Warriors-Celtics finals that did so weirdly, you know, substandard numbers, that draws better now, obviously. So I think you get pretty much any competitive series that's not, you know, ridiculous, right? I mean, so obviously ridiculous would be like Orlando, New Orleans or something. If you can get, you know, New York, Minnesota, there's a lot of potential there. Boston, Minnesota. If it's Boston, Denver, people believe these are the two best teams in the league. And the games are close and it goes 7. I mean, I don't even think it would need close games in 7 to be competing to for a 5-year high. But certainly, if you get a close Boston-Denver series and it goes 7, frankly, that could maybe even, I'd have to take a look, maybe not 2018. Because that was the Warriors-Cavs, it was a sweep. So a sweep will never be that great of a ratings draw. But I think that's still averaged probably about 18 million or so. So probably not surpassing that. But certainly you could surpass 2019, you know, Raptors, Warriors. You could surpass that number. It's not impossible. That was about a 15 million average. A 7th game, a game 7 that gets you 23, 24 million, that'll bump that average up. You could be looking at a 6-year high. But of course, that's if everything falls into place.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's do some accounting on the opening weekend so we can fill our listeners in on that. You put a very interesting chart out on your website, John, that shows the opening weekend viewership since the start of the current NBA television deals. And I was actually quite surprised to see where we stand today in 2024, where the opening weekend averaged 3.77 million viewers across all the games versus where we were in, you know, the early aughts here, 2003, 04, 05, 06, 07. All of those opening weekend numbers under 3 million. You know, this is not where the narrative is when it comes to NBA viewership. And I know we've talked about that many times on this podcast, but still surprising to see that this year, you know, they're averaging over a million more viewers than they were in the mid 2000s.
Yeah, I mean, out of home has something to do with that. Not entirely, because it's not like if you take out of home viewing out, this figure drops under 3 million. It certainly doesn't. Also, you know, just the growth of the population in 20 years as well.
Sure.
But people have this idea that, oh, the NBA's Bud Light. The viewership is the lowest ever. No, of course not. I mean, in the bubble, you could make that argument. But even then, that was all just August, no fans. Come on. Weekday afternoon playoff games, get out of here. The reality is that for the NBA, the worst you could say about the NBA right now is that it is in that early 2000s era. That's just back where it was. And that the LeBron era of maybe 2008 through 19 ended, and the league just went right back to where it was. Frankly, that's what I think has happened. That's not necessarily the greatest place to be. I mean, it wasn't a great era in the NBA in the mid 2000s, but it's not crisis level. It's not, oh my, I mean, like, eventually the people who believe that the NBA died, that, oh, these black people, look what they've done, right? The people who believe that will have to look around and say, wait, why is the NBA still getting billions of dollars? I don't get it. Because, I mean, the reality, let's just occupy a reality-based space here, right? If the NBA had collapsed, it would be obvious. You wouldn't have to be making the argument, right? The NBA's viewership declined. Maybe it even declined because people didn't like BLM on the court, right? Maybe it declined because people didn't like BLM on the jerseys or whatever. It declined to a place where it's been before, to a manageable place. To a place where the NBA is still one of the top draws in sports television, football excluded, obviously. I mean, I guess you could include football since, I mean, it's only, what, pro and college. But, you know, I mean, obviously the NBA is still as big a property as any. And, you know, obviously it'd be great for the league if the numbers were back where they were in the LeBron Golden State era. I'm sure they would love that. But where the league is now is not an emergency, not particularly notable, not really cause for panic or alarm. It's not cause for popping some champagne either, but I mean, let's be realistic.
I think I saw former podcast guest John Kosner on Twitter the other day mention how, you know, a lot of sports viewership is cyclical. And I don't think he was talking about this in the context of the NBA, so I don't want to, you know, put words into his mouth or anything, but this seems kind of apparent here, though, where, you know, there will be highs and lows throughout, you know, if you're looking at NBA viewership on a decades long timeline. It's natural that, you know, they're going to have higher viewership when there's a world-class superstar like LeBron James playing in the league. And now that his career is in its twilight, you know, it makes sense that they're back to a baseline level of viewership pre-LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. I keep going back to, if you'll notice in that chart on my site with the opening weekend, and, you know, I mean, that's just 4-8 games, 2 days, but the trend is pretty much the same no matter what you look at with the NBA. You'll notice that the drop-off starts in 2019. George Floyd was alive in 2019. No one had ever heard of COVID in 2019. So the drop-off starts in 2019, right? LeBron hadn't even made those clumsy comments about China in the 2019 playoffs, right? Just to be clear. So the drop-off starts in 2019. I think politics probably hasn't helped, but I don't think that's the reason why this happened. I think it happened because LeBron James immediately ended his career as a contender for championships by signing with the Los Angeles Lakers. And one of the reasons why LeBron is one of the greatest of all time is because he managed to take the Lakers to a championship in the post-Jerry Buss era, right? That's kind of amazing. But, you know, LeBron signing with the Lakers was kind of the end of LeBron. Well, not kind of. He made 8 straight finals. Then he signed with the Lakers, and he's made 1 in, what, 6 years since, right? He's missed the playoffs more often than he's been to the finals. He'll have lost in the first round more often than he's been to the finals once the series with Denver is over. So going to the Lakers was the end of LeBron's chapter, right? Now, he had a little afterword in 2020, but it was the end of the LeBron chapter. People don't realize the Steph chapter ended too. It ended very similarly. The Lakers have had more success since the Warriors had Durant than the Warriors have had. That's something people don't realize. It's incredible. But the Lakers franchise has had more success. They've been more accomplished. So since Durant left Golden State, so we're setting the clock to 2019-20. Since then, the Lakers have missed the playoffs once. They've been knocked out in the first round twice, won a finals, and made the conference finals. The Warriors have missed the playoffs 3 times. 3 times. The Warriors, right, have missed the playoffs 3 times. They have made the second round once and won a title. So unless you're weighting that second round as equivalent of 2 first rounds, like, the Warriors have actually had a worse run than the Lakers have had. So you have the 2 teams that were carrying ratings aloft then and still are, LeBron's team and Steph's team. And they are both mediocre teams that won a fluky title and otherwise have not been particularly relevant since the Trump administration, right? You know, because since the days of Scaramucci.
All right, John, I think that's a good place to leave our NBA conversation. Let's close out the show talking about the NHL's opening nights of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Very strong ratings for the National Hockey League here. The NHL was up 51% in the ratings and 60% in the viewership across the first 2 days and across ESPN, TBS, and True TV. That was led by Capitals Rangers in game 1 on ESPN, which reached 1.34 million. The average across all games for the first 2 days, 641,000. So, very strong start for the NHL. Where do we go from here?
Sometimes good decision making in sports TV is as simple as scheduling. So the Stanley Cup playoffs started on a weekend this year instead of the weeknights. So instead of 8 overlapping windows on weeknights, you have 6, should have been 8, 6 standalone windows on Saturday and Sunday. And that's not going to come out in the wash. It's not going to come out in the wash because it's not like, oh, well, we started on a weekend, so we have to take a weekend out later on. It's just an extra weekend. The weekend is where the sports viewership is highest. So it makes sense to start on a Saturday. I don't really know why the NHL has resisted doing this for so many years. Even this year, only 6 games instead of all 8. But this needs to be what they do from now on. What would be really smart is if they went back to what it used to be, where the NHL playoffs started a week before the NBA. Because then you get a stand. Well, you go up against the Masters. Masters doesn't scare me anymore, really. I mean, that's still 10 million viewers on that Sunday. It's still a big number. But it's not that bad. I mean, I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, when the NBA started the playoffs, that 2019 playoffs I talked about, that was the only playoffs that started on Masters weekend, now that I think about it. And Tiger happened to win that year, too. It's pretty bad luck. But the point being, if they could do that weekend start and not have it competing with the NBA, who knows where the viewership might go for some of those games. Because I was actually, even though the numbers were great, I was prepared for like 2 million or something for a game. So, you know, I think there's still room to grow for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that the viewership is going to go up with the schedule change. Even, you know, when I was looking at last Thursday's ratings for the website and looking at the regular season finale, simply moving their television broadcast windows up 1 hour from the previous year, whereas instead of doing 8 and 10:30 Eastern time, they were doing 7 and 9:30 Eastern time. Those the first game was up 50%, the second game was up 25% or thereabout. I mean, it's these little things that can actually impact viewership the most, to your point. And getting that extra weekend in for the Stanley Cup playoffs is probably going to bode very well once we look at these numbers at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs and tally up the averages.
Yeah. I think, I mean, first of all, the Stanley Cup playoffs is going to be up double digits no matter what. Last year set an awful bar. Last year's playoffs was over as soon as the Panthers beat the Bruins. That was the end of the playoffs in round one. And that's not hyperbole. That was the most watched game of the whole playoffs, was the Panthers beating the Bruins in a first round, non-exclusive game seven. So the rest of that postseason was awful from a ratings perspective. So the bar is really low. Anything can surpass that bar. And certainly the fact that the Cup final is on ABC. Like, if you have to have a Toronto-Edmonton final, this is the year to do it. Be on ABC. You're basically guaranteed an increase in viewership for any series over a low-rated all-cable series in the year before. So this is the year for Toronto-Edmonton if you're American TV. I think this was going to be a great postseason for hockey no matter what because of the low bar. The weekend start only helps. Having the, you know, New York in there, having Boston, you know, things can still go badly. Nobody wants
Alex Ovechkin sneaking into the playoffs. Oh, yeah. With the Capitals as well. That was no guarantee.
Right. Is Crosby there? The Penguins aren't there, right?
No, I believe the Penguins missed out.
So Crosby and Ovechkin, LeBron and Steph. It's the same story, is it not?
No, I mean, certainly a very similar story. And it's incredible. Like, you know, I don't follow hockey as closely as I do the NBA, but, you know, these are guys that I've known growing up my entire life, like, you know, since I was a child. And the fact that they're still playing in a sport as physical as hockey is pretty insane. I'm always shocked at how long some of these hockey players' careers can be.
Well, you get hit enough times, you don't really feel it anymore, do you? So, you know, that explains Gordie Howe, right? Look, the fact is that for hockey, this is really shaping up to be a very nice postseason for them. I honestly feel right now, if the whole postseason is up like 20%, which is massive for a full postseason, I could see that being a realistic possibility.
All right, John, a couple quick hitters to close us out. Let's first talk about the passing of Howie Schwab, legendary ESPN producer, researcher, and of course, host of Stump the Schwab, which growing up for me, it was probably my favorite ESPN show, and I don't say that lightly.
Well, I have to admit, I did not love Stump the Schwab when it was on, and I honestly feel bad about that because I should have loved it. It was sports trivia, but at that time, ESPN was doing a lot of weird stuff. They were doing like beg, borrow, and deal, tilt, all these weird dramas, reality shows, and so I kind of put Stump the Schwab in that silo. Although I did actually watch Stump the Schwab, now that I think about it, and I don't know how many episodes I watched. I know what it looks like in my mind. Mm-hmm. I don't remember ever watching it, but I must have. So I did put that in the silo of Mark Shapiro nonsense, and I decided I wasn't going to watch it. You know, Howie Schwab, obviously, look, ESPN has laid off nearly its entire soul over the past decade. And, you know, a business, a culture is created by the people inside of it. When you get rid of the people who are, you know, intrinsic to that culture, you end up with what ESPN is now, you know, this remnant of what people used to love. As far as Howie Schwab goes, you know, I mean, it's really unfortunate, just 63 years old, had a lot of health issues and, you know, it's too bad. But yes, I believe, now correct me if I'm wrong, that was Stuart Scott was the co-host on that show.
Yes.
Yeah. So Kenny Mayne was doing 2-Minute Drill, which was a similar concept, right?
You know, I don't remember 2 minute drill.
It might be going back too far.
Yeah, you know, Stump the Schwab was right on like the edge of me. Like, you know, I remember probably mostly seeing reruns of it after the show was already, you know, right, canned, because, you know, in 2004 I was a wee lad, let's just say.
So yeah, look, when it comes down to it, a network is only as good as the people who work there. And when you're laying off all the people who work there who are the most meaningful to everybody, eventually you lose yourself, which ESPN has. And Howie Schwab is someone who represents the ESPN that doesn't exist anymore and could not exist. You know, all those things that I hated that Mark Shapiro did, and I blame Mark Shapiro principally for a lot of where the industry is, because he created, as much as I love PTI, he created the debate format. I'm sure he was the reason why we had Skip Bayless debating Stephen A. Smith. He's the one who brought Stephen A. Smith to ESPN. So I do put all the stuff that I find just so unenjoyable about sports TV, that's all Mark Shapiro's brainchild. He created it. For better or worse, whatever you think about this industry, Mark Shapiro of, I believe, Endeavor now, right?
Yep.
And we're never getting rid of Mark Shapiro. He'll be there forever. But the point is, whatever you think of Mark Shapiro, and I definitely do not like most of what he did, there was something interesting about ESPN at that time. They were taking big swings. I didn't like most of those swings, but they took big swings and they were doing really what MTV did. Like, if they had followed Mark Shapiro all the way, they'd just be airing ridiculousness every day now. But certainly, Stump the Schwab was part of a series of shows that would not air on ESPN today because they only know how to do one thing. That's debate TV. I mean, we did have Sports Jeopardy, and he was part of that for about 5 minutes with the Danettes and Dan Patrick. And I loved Sports Jeopardy. I did. I was their only viewer. So yeah. Dan, if you're ever wondering, I was the one guy watching that.
Let's move on to the WNBA media rights, which I know you wanted to discuss quickly here. We know it'll be a big year for the league.
Right.
There were some new deals announced last week. So give us the rundown, John.
Well, really, more than anything, I just wanted to say that the conversation about the WNBA's finances has been really dumb. And it's really dumb the past couple of weeks. We're not going to do a full Caitlin Clark free episode. I have no problem with Caitlin, but we've obviously done Caitlin Clark several weeks in a row. But for whatever reason, Caitlin Clark, who stays above the fray and doesn't indulge any of this, Caitlin Clark is a magnet for weird culture warriors who want to have a fight. They want to have a fight about everything. Oh, man, Caitlin Clark got this contract. But what about Asia Wilson? Hey, is Asia Wilson anywhere close to as popular as Caitlin Clark? She's not, right? She's a more accomplished basketball player, a better basketball player, probably. Is she as popular? If the answer is no, then that's why she doesn't have the same shoe contract, right? And then people talk about the salary. Everyone who has followed the WNBA knows they don't make a lot of money. We all know this. We know that it's because the league does not generate nearly as much in revenue as the NBA does. And that's just the way it is. You're not going to go from 1997 not existing to 2023 the equal of the NBA. This is not a reasonable expectation. But people who don't care about the WNBA, have never watched, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Caitlin Clark's only making $76,000. How is she going to feed her family? And it's like, well, one, she's going to have endorsements. All those NIL deals are going to be surpassed by Nike, obviously, right? So she's going to be making money. Biden weighed in on this. And I thought Ron Klain left the White House, but Biden somehow weighed in on this topic, not really knowing anything about it. We have to have equal pay. And it's like, it's a different league. It's a wholly different league. There is no crisis here except for maybe the WNBA's players need to do a better job in collective bargaining. But frankly, I don't even know what they could do. The money's not there. So it's not like Nneka Ogwumike can go in and say, owners, you'd better pay us the exact same salary as LeBron James. I mean, that's not going to happen. They literally couldn't if they wanted to. So the controversy is, it's one of those things where it's like people who don't care, don't follow, have never been a part of it, now want, it's that born-again energy we talked about before. Now, oh, well, I'm here and I'm going to dictate the terms of the discussion, right? It's like Whoopi Goldberg going on The View to ESPN. You will pay these women more money. It's like, step off. You're not part of this. You don't know anything about the topic. And that goes from Whoopi Goldberg to Darren Rovell. And, you know, I don't feel the same way about Darren that other people do. Darren came on my, well, not my podcast, but Darren gave me an interview for the site. One of the first interviews I had on the site in 2009. And I don't believe that I would be able to do what I'm doing if people like Darren Rovell didn't help pave the way by mainstreaming sports business. So I'm not trying to take cheap shots at Darren, but same deal with Darren. People who don't really follow it aren't really, you know, I mean, it's like there's no controversy here. The amount of money they make is what it is. Hopefully with this generation of stars, it will improve. Between this generation of stars raising the profile of the league, raising its popularity, and maybe the players being a little bit more intense in collective bargaining. Like I said, there's not a ton that Nneka Abumike can do, right? Assuming she's still, the main player in this. But the WNBA has never lost a game to strike or lockout. If you want better conditions, you're going to have to lose some games. That's the way it's always been done. You're going to have to put the enterprise at risk. It's not great. It's not ideal. And it could backfire. But if you want better conditions, everybody knows there's got to be some level of sacrifice in terms of either striking or being locked out. Yeah. And it's going to be a major risk because if you really push it. Now, I think everyone involved knows there's a golden goose coming into the league. No one wants to mess with that. So the owners might be more amenable since, you know, hey, rising tide benefits everybody to giving the players a bigger cut. But, you know, if there's any possibility, this is the CBA where the players have to capitalize because the business is going to change. So they have to capitalize. Otherwise, they're done. Maybe that's overstating it, but like this circumstance isn't going to come around again very soon. So you have an opportunity to renegotiate terms right as the league is starting to become way more popular. That's perfect. So the players must come out with better terms.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, they will have the most leverage that they've had ever in their negotiating. I know they secured big wins in their last CBA a few years ago. So it is not as if you're giving me a face as if they didn't. I mean, it was even worse before.
It was.
You know, so.
Yeah. Wins, but like the wins they're going to need now are much bigger than that.
All right, John. I think it's about time that we close out. We've gone pretty long today.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts on this week in sports media?
Not really. You know, it's very interesting. We keep ping-ponging from one to the other. It's like a steady stream straight from the Super Bowl into college basketball, into the NBA playoffs and NHL, into the Olympics. I mean, goodness gracious. And I'm not going to say I want a break. The last time I did that, we got 4 months off. But back in 2020. But, look, it's a lot. So I'm glad that all of you out there are listening to the podcast, reading the site. I appreciate it greatly. And we'll be back with more stuff next week.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.